G'day everyone, welcome to the Flight of the Next podcast. I'm Holly, I'm here on Gadigal land in Sydney. We have Alex at Te Whanganui Aotearoa Wellington. And we have a new special guest, Mr. Danny Avis. Danny is a little corner of yellow stalwart. He shows up not just to all the men's games, but to all the women's ones he can as well. So welcome, Danny.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here. My first time.
Awesome. So we're going to have a pretty unstructured conversation, I think, because there have been so many games lately. So today we were going to have a bit of a chat about, Friday, 2nd of February, we played Brisbane Roar in Brisbane. We drew because we conceded in stoppage time, and the goal we had was from Crave. We're also going to talk about Central Coast Mariners, that nil-all draw in Wellington on Tuesday, 6th of Feb, and then the one that was on Saturday, which was also in Wellington, a 2-0 win over bottom-placed Western United, a goal from Pennington and a Donaghy own goal. Brisbane Roar, they are really a team that we should be beating, but then they turn around and they thrashed City on the weekend. How are we feeling about that result? Because I think a lot of us felt maybe a little bit depressed about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of personally fine with only a point. Chiefy said in his pre-match press conference that he's fine with getting points away from home, which, you know, is fair enough. Historically, we haven't been the best away from home. And, you know, Brisbane away, I mean, the crowd didn't look the best. It's kind of a big stadium. But they've also got a new coach, right? Ruben Zadkovic. Am I correct? Yeah. So, you know, yeah. New coaches can kind of spice things up, I guess. You know, you can't really look at their previous form when they've just got a new coach or just... So I'm personally fine with just the point.
I think the big...
Yeah, I would say I would probably... Pretty disappointing, I think. I get what you're saying, Alex, and generally I'm not very negative about any points of the fittings we'll get. I think our expectations are allowed to be a bit higher this season now we're top of the table. It's hard to do that, but as Phoenix fans, we're normally expecting, you know, as I say, anything is good, but really we're playing a team that's down the bottom end of the table that just lost their second coach of the season. They'd lost a couple of players to injury. They lost another player to injury in their warm-up. They lost three players to injury during the game, and they were in front of a pretty pathetic home crowd. If we can't beat them, what does that say about us as a top-of-the-table team or our pretension to be a top-of-the-table team? So I was probably thinking a bit like you, but thinking back at it, really, that's a disappointing result. And I think Chiefy would be disappointed. We were missing a couple of players ourselves. We were missing Rufo, and I think we were missing Payne. But still, we should be putting people like that away. And I think we had the chance to do it, and I think we sat back too much and went into our nice, comfortable low block and thought, they're never going to get through, but eventually a shot bouncing off a leg and it'll go in eventually. Looking back, I think I'm a bit more disappointed at that.
I think the big talking point or controversy was what I think most people think is genuinely a foul on Ben Ault before Brisbane scored right at the end. He's basically just been shoved over and no foul was called. How did you guys feel about that? To me, it really looked like a foul. It could have changed. I mean, they wouldn't have scored that goal, and we'd be having a different conversation. We wouldn't be, oh, we're disappointed. Oh, we didn't play well enough. We'd be like, oh, we eked out a result.
I actually didn't, like, in real time, I didn't actually think it was a foul. Like, there was a kind of ishy foul in the build-up to our goal as well. Oscar Van Hattem kind of clattered his defender. And I think if that stands... then the stand, you know, this might be kind of slightly worse, but, you know, it all kind of evens itself out in the end.
Look, in real time, I probably thought that wasn't a foul as well. In slow motion, it said it looked a lot worse. He sort of picked him up and threw him aside. I think the referee probably just thought, well, you should have fought a bit harder than Ben if you really wanted to avoid that. And although, yes, they scored from that, they had so many chances leading up to it, and we did so little to keep them away from our penalty box that I don't think we can really complain too much. Ben Ault does go down fairly easily, whether that's deliberately or whether because he's not strong enough, I don't know.
He was, I think, last season the most fouled person in the competition, even though he doesn't even start matches. I know they've, what I hear from inside the Phoenix, that they've worked on that quite a lot with him, with his strength. He doesn't go down so easily anymore, but this time he did, and they scored. But, you know, I don't think we can blame anyone really but ourselves, because we sat back so much in that second half. So, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, I heard Chiefy in the post-match talking about how he thought he was at fault for that late goal. He said that he brought on too many subs. We kind of said a bit nonchalantly, like maybe I brought on too many subs. So that's kind of an interesting point that I thought. I'm just looking at the subs right now. And Oscar Zavada for Oscar Van Haddam, that kind of seems like a fairly straightforward swap. Like Oscar Van Haddam, Oscar Zavada would kind of, you would think he'd be more defensive than Oscar Van Haddam because he can, you know, win a header. The other one is Fergus Gillian on for Bojan Akrai. That's the only one I can see. And maybe Finn Contrion for David Ball that would really kind of upset the defensive balance. Like, what do you think about that?
Well, I think Oscar Van Haddam's much more likely to come back in and defend than Zavada, to be honest. Zavada, one, he's coming back from injury, and he's our focal point. He's a target man, so he's going to stay up around the halfway line, and he's not coming back, except for set pieces. He's not going to come back and hang around the penalty spot, whereas Van Haddam has probably been shouted out to do that. So we may have lost that a little bit, I guess. Finn Conchi is more defensive than David Ball, so don't have a problem with that. And we know Mohamed Altay was injured, I think, that game, so we didn't have a choice to bring Ben Holdon for that one. And the Fergus Gillian one, I think that was just a time-wasting one at the end, which didn't quite work.
Yeah, because Chiefy doesn't really use many subs. He's spoke about it before. He's never actually used five subs in a whole game, I think. I don't know. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But I was just thinking, you know, Oscar Zavada is so strong and he can win headers. I was just, because he might have won that header if he was in the box at that time. But, you know, probably wouldn't have been, so.
Yeah, Zavada, I'd like to see his stats for that game, but I don't think he really touched the ball very much at all. He seemed to be fairly pointless. Now, whether that's because we were just sitting back and we weren't getting the ball out to him enough, or whether, again, he was just not fit enough to really insert himself into the game, I don't know.
Well, he did get injured straight away, I'm pretty sure, Chiefy said that he, I don't know, was it his groin? Am I right? I don't know. As soon as he came on, he kind of pulled something, and then he was pretty much out of action for the rest of the game. So that definitely would have affected something at least.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the Brisbane game, or we'll move on to Mariners? All right. So I think the telling thing for this game is the XG for us was 0.25. And the XG for Mariners was 0.45. So a nil-all draw is probably about right. Alex, you were there. What was it like? It was a really good crowd.
Crowd was great. Best crowd I've seen in a while since we came back from COVID. But, you know, the atmosphere just wasn't there, I don't think. Like, probably partly because we weren't playing that well. But in Yellow Fever, like, I looked around, there were more people there for the Melbourne Victory game. I think it might just be, like, I don't know, I guess the casuals coming along and then the hardcores not, because there's been so many top of the table clashes in a while. I really can't find a reason for it other than the game was just really, really boring. You know, I think even if the game finished 4-3 as a loss, it would have been better, because then the people would have come back, at least they would have been entertained, and then they're more likely to come back. You know, I think we might have lost a few people there.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, I really enjoyed the match, but then I'm a football purist, I guess, so I'm not a casual coming along to see my first game of football, or, you know, one game of football a season. But the fact that there was much more space to play, we actually played more rather than, again, the last couple of games, we'd been sitting in that low block and just asking them to come on to us. We weren't doing that, because they didn't allow us to do that. We were coming out, they were coming out. Yes, there wasn't much happening in the penalty areas, but I thought some of the midfield play was good to watch, but again, I'm a bit of a purist, maybe.
Yeah, especially when we have so many players out, like who Moalte was out for that one, Pennington as well, Tim Payne and Alex Ruffer were back, and then we kind of dropped David Ball, Bojan Akrai into midfield. They're not really natural midfielders. They're definitely more attacking. So I think those players would have helped. But also just like we were crossing a fair few balls, but most of the time they just weren't even beating the first person. Like Central Coast Mariners, they've got a really big centre back in Brian Keltak. Mm-hmm. I guess that we were thinking, you know, our attackers are fairly short, David Ball, Kosovo Baroussis. So I guess we're thinking, let's not cross it high and then maybe like a skidding ball across the bottom. Costa's very fast, so maybe he'd be able to get there first. But Brian Keltak just completely cleaned them up. Like they weren't even beating him. Like he just cleaned up every single cross that we put in. Like I think that was an area that we really could have, you know, made a goal from, and we just didn't.
So the normal Knicks fans, like the regulars, were probably very happy to get the point in the context of the season and the fact that it was a six-pointer and things like that. But, a lot of like, oh, we play the ball in and then Brian Keltak just like clears. It's just not very exciting. Danny?
Yeah. I think it showed our strength so much, our defensive. I mean, Central Coast Mariners have been on just an amazing run up until then. All their games have been so exciting attacking-wise. I mean, Torres has been absolutely on fire. The fact that Torres had, I think, one shot in the entire game speaks volumes about our defence. But again, if you're just coming to see excitement, you're not going to go, oh, look at the position. It was Tim Payne. Wasn't that spectacular? You know, you're not going to see that as an excitement thing, although it speaks volumes about how well we were doing defensively that we kept him to a clean sheet, which no one else has managed, even close to managing to keep Central Coast from scoring, because they were scoring for fun against everybody by then. So, yeah, it also showed the fact that, yeah, we probably do struggle to score as well. We're not a natural attacking side. Without Zawada there I would love to have seen Zawada against Keltak. That would have been a wonderful battle to see. But without that, we didn't really have that much going forward. Well, not where it counted in the penalty box anyway.
Any other comments on the Mariners game? Other than we are top of the league.
Funny story about that, actually. Like the Mariners, they got a free kick just straight in front of the box, like just like right outside the box. And then all of Yellow Fever started chanting, "We are top of the league." And all like the core were like, "Why are you doing that now? Why are you doing that now?" They're just like, this is a massive opportunity that they have to score. It's probably, you know, the best set piece of the game, the most likely set piece to go in, and we had to kind of start a Phoenix chant to drown them out.
You'd probably be pretty satisfying as a player to like score that and then run over to the field and be like, "Well,
just completely silent."
What was that? Oh my god!
With the just with the crowd, you're saying obviously our biggest crowd for a long time, and yeah, it didn't feel like it at the stadium. Are people going to go away from that, the casuals, and go, "Yeah, it's pretty boring. I'm not going to come back again." Do the Phoenix need to put more on so they're not relying on what happens on the pitch to entertain these casuals? You look at, I suppose, 2020 over here, the BBL. I don't think anyone really knows what the actual score is at the end of the game. But the kids keep going back because it's bright and shiny. There's fireworks. There's all sorts of stuff going on. And so they pester their parents and take them back the next time. Even though they may have no idea what the score was, that's almost irrelevant to the entertainment. If the Phoenix really want to keep those casuals coming back, maybe they need to have to do a bit more off the pitch and not just rely on the team to win, because that's not always going to happen.
Yeah, that is a fair
interesting
point. I think sport is kind of moving more into that direction. You know, the Super Bowl was yesterday and they've got all those halftime shows and the confetti, and it's just completely Americanized. But that is a lot bigger than, you know, Joaquin Phoenix versus Central Coast Mariners. But, you know, can we kind of just do anything better? You know, they got the little Phoenix logo that they set on fire after we score. But if we're not scoring, then that doesn't really count for anything. Sometimes they do a shirt cannon. I think that's mostly at Porirua Park. I've seen them do it at Eden Park as well, I think, but never at Sky Stadium. But it's kind of pretty hard to get it up, all the way up and Sky Stadium. But yeah, that's something that we can think of.
Yeah, I think Sky Stadium's the elephant in the room when it comes to crowds and the atmosphere and the ground. It might be possible to do more things. The issue is those things cost money. And so you've got to, like, the club has to make a you know, a rational decision about if we spend this money on what you'd call activations or fireworks or whatever, you know, what will we see a return on investment that makes that worthwhile? And sometimes you have to do a bit of trial and error. I actually went just randomly to the cricket, the BBL grand final, the men's one. And I was really taken by like how, like every time the over finished, there was like the announcer on the ground. It's like, oh, we're going to do the YMCA. And there was just constantly stuff on. And I was like, I wonder what the A-leagues could take from this. But the problem is that we don't have breaks in the game, right? We play for the 45 minutes and then you get a chance to do some fun things, you know, whereas like you can blast music once the over is done. In cricket, or you can have heaps of little things because there's all these pauses that you are just the right length that you can put these sorts of entertainment in, but it's really hard to do that for football, really hard.
Yeah, you'll also get people like myself who'd be really annoyed by it as well, because we just go there to watch the football and we don't want to be annoyed by commentators or getting the crowd up to sing. And we've seen that before, people do complain about that, and that's always difficult to balance those people who are going to come every week and probably don't want that to the people who you do want to keep. You know, I don't know. I think the Waitangi Day seemed to be a success to have it on Waitangi Day, and I think that'd be stupid not to try that again. You know, and as you say, there may be a cost involved in this, but this would maybe be a game, the Waitangi Day game, where they can really try and push about that a little bit to try and keep those casuals. Getting back next time.
So we'll move on to the fact that there were way fewer people. So we played Western United. We will talk about the kit debacle. So we won 2-0. We scored right after the beginning of the like first half, and then right after half time, effectively. So it was Nico Pennington, and then Donaghy with an own goal. I'm glad that we got a win against bottom place Western United. It would have been a little bit embarrassing and depressing had we not actually got a result from them at home. How did we feel about it, Alex? What was the atmosphere like? Let's talk about the kit debacle. Thoughts?
Yeah, the atmosphere, it wasn't that bad. You know, there were about half the people then at the Central Coast Mariners game, but the atmosphere was definitely much better. I think yellow fever, kind of when we're not playing well or when it's just a boring game, tend to just stop chanting. I don't know. It might be more of the casual thing. They don't join in. But yeah, the atmosphere was pretty good. And good goals as well, I guess.
Yeah, for me, this was one of a game that I've been hoping for a long time, when we were just comfortably in charge. We got a couple of goals in. We weren't going to lose. I didn't have to stress at the end that we were, you know, let a late equaliser in. We weren't just sitting at a low block, so they were constantly attacking. We were just comfortably in control. They were never going to win this game. We were always going to win. It was just a matter of, you know, how many goals we ended up scoring. We scored two. We probably could have had one more. It was a nice, comfortable watch. I think, you know, we weren't spectacular, but we were always in charge. So that was good. The kit debacle was fun. They say peak A-League, but this happens all the time. You'd be surprised how often it's happened, even in the English League, Premier League, happens more often than you think, and it's just someone not reading an email. So it's Western United's kit man going, we'll bring our home kit. I'm not reading the email from the A-League saying Phoenix going to be playing in black. So, yeah, amusing, I think. Yeah. I know people sort of say peak A-League and use it to slag off the A-League, but, you know, it gets people talking.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. And Jack Mapp, or whatever his name is, doing this like mad dash to to NZCIS or to grab them, and BK having to play in number 49. I think they asked BK about it like post match, and he said like it really didn't bother them, the professionals, like it is what it is. You know, it's not the biggest disaster of the weekend, which was definitely in the women's league with Sydney FC driving their bus to the wrong field for their game against Melbourne City. But yeah, you're right. It does happen a lot.
A couple of weeks ago in the EPL, I think Youth League, someone drove to the wrong city. They're supposed to be going to Brighton and they drove to Bournemouth. So again, it can happen anywhere, although that's a bit bigger. I was sort of hoping that, you know, they would end up coming out in, or well, West United come out and playing like Hurricane shirts or something like that, but they couldn't get hold of the new kit. It would have been interesting to see that.
Any other thoughts on the game and how it went? I think that was the result that we've been waiting for a little while, Danny. I think you make a really good point there. And we scored that really early goal, and I was worried we were just going to sit back after doing that, but we didn't.
Yeah.
Sit back, and we did keep pushing. So what a relief to see that we can actually get those results and not just like playing people into form, which is what we sort of joke about as Phoenix fans, in the past.
And I think that game and probably the Central Coast game shows how important Alex Rufer is to just controlling how we play, whether we sit back, whether we go forward, the kind of speed that we play at, and just really controls the tempo of the game. He's such an important player, even if you don't necessarily think he does much himself. I think he really does in terms of marshalling the team to play at the right tempo and game management.
He's like the quiet achiever, right? Like he could really be player of the season for me.
I think he could be. And you probably wouldn't point out anything in particular he's done. It's not like he doesn't run the length of the field and score a screamer. He doesn't clear things off the line all the time. He just breaks up their attacks all the time, just constantly. He just stops them getting to the places where they can be dangerous and then plays it off. So you don't see it so much unless you're watching for it, but I think he's such an important player for the Phoenix.
All right, shall we move on to the women's game? So there's only been one game to talk about it because last weekend we would have played Adelaide, but the Ferns are playing in the Oceania Olympics qualifying tournament. We will talk about the Ferns post-tournament, but for now we can just cover the next woman. This was against Newcastle Jets in Newcastle. It was supposed to be in Maitland, but it was going to be so hot in Maitland that they moved it inland. Towards the coast. 3-2, really early goal from Speckmeyer and a goal early in the second half from Izzy Cox. Dean and I went to this match. It was only us, really, but we made friends as always, and there's some, you know, great people out there that we love to run into, like Todd, what a great guy. Big Newcastle Jets fan. When we scored that first goal in the fourth minute, I wasn't even that happy. Like that's how depressing the away performances have been, and the fact that we've had leads. We've scored the goal first in a whole heap of these games, and have then gone on to lose. So I cheered, but my heart was not in it because it just didn't mean as much as it should do. And I found that was really, really sad when I thought about that. Other thoughts?
I hear what you're saying, and obviously we did lose after scoring the first goal, but I do think this was probably one of our best away performances for a long time. I don't think we deserve to lose. I think there was one difference between the sides, and that was Serena Bolden. Without her, the Jets aren't winning that. And they scored two absolute screamers, which, you know, nothing you can do about that. And I thought we had much better control of that game than we have done for a long time, especially through the midfield. For a long time, we haven't had very good control in our midfield, and I think we did then. We played it through the midfield nicely. We passed it around, and we seemed to come back to small ball, which I haven't seen much of in away games for a long time. And we got two goals. Isabel Cox, when she got involved, is excellent. And, I think we were unlucky to lose. We lost a couple of very good goals and a player who's one of the best in the league involved. And I don't know why we didn't sign it.
Yeah, I do think, you know, you can say it was luck. I think if an outsider watched that game, you know, all the highlights, they would say it was luck. But they would say that Phoenix were unlucky, but we say that every week. Like we say pretty much every away game, we're like, oh, we were really unlucky that game. We should have won there. We scored first and then conceded two to go behind or conceded three to go behind. Is it really luck if it's just the same thing every single week? Like, you can you be consistently unlucky? Like, at what point is it just, oh no, you're not playing well enough to get the win?
If you're Mark Rudan, you'd say the establishment, but I
there's a stigma against the working Phoenix woman.
I thought it was a real improvement on our previous away games. We played well the game before at home where we'd won. I saw this performance more on par with that than the other ones. We'll obviously see with the next game. Well, actually, won't see the next game here. I'm trying to be positive and optimistic and say I saw more control and I thought better play. Yes, we lost, but we lost some cracking goals, which, we should have done better, but again, they were absolutely worldly.
It wasn't the most disheartening of our losses.
Should we talk about Brianna Edwards' save? You know, Serena Bolden header, kind of Brie dives one way, and then mid-dives, she kind of switches directions and reads it perfectly.
Incredible.
Yeah, amazing save. It's really interesting to see that we've got two such good keepers at the club. And the fact that Brie is probably not going to play for the rest of the season now, quite possibly, because Riley's going to come back and she's number one. I'm glad Brie got a game of the Ferns. That's really good. But yeah, her movement to get across to it and then getting both hands up to it, spectacular.
Yeah, I don't think Riley Foster saves that, to be honest. She's been like physically lacking a bit, I think. You know, she was in a car crash and I don't think she fully has recovered from that. Like, technically she's probably the best goalkeeper in the league by some distance. You know, playing for Liverpool, that's quite a high bar. But then physically, you know, she banged her head against the post one time and then she was out for a game. She's gotten injured a few times. She's gotten a few cramps, like pretty much every game. The physios come on around the 60-70 minute mark. Is that sustainable in the long term, or do we actually need to be playing Brie and investing in the future?
Well, I guess we've signed Foster now and we'll play her because she's, you know, a very good keeper. But, you know, again, I don't worry if she does get injured, if she doesn't play, because I think Brie is basically just as good a keeper as Riley Foster. I think she's probably missing. I think Foster's distribution is better. She kicks the ball a lot longer, gets us more on the attack that way, and maybe she marshals her defence a bit better because she can communicate. Should we put it that way? So I think she maybe shouts at her defenders very well and sets the defence that well. But in terms of actual saving and movement, I think Brie's just as good as Riley Foster.
Brie's more athletic, and it's probably something to do with like breaking your back and people saying, like, you know, going to the hospital and people being like, why are you walking, quickly get in the bed, like, it's probably what. Yes, it's hard, it's a good problem to have, right, if you're a coach. But maybe Riley would have struggled with that, or maybe her positioning would have been different and it would have been an easy save. It's so hard to know, but that was absolutely cracking save, and I think everyone thought that was in for all money, how she got to that. Incredible. Absolutely. I want to talk about the facilities at number two sports ground. So that's the Jets woman main ground, right? Like, sometimes they play at McDonald Jones, which is the main men's ground, that's the big stadium, but usually that's just double headers. Usually they play at number two. It's a decent ground, like, it's got a grandstand, it's not big. But it's a rectangular ground, which, you know, really matters. It's kind of a little bit like Porirua Park, right? It's that kind of setup. I was really angry when I found out that, despite this being a women's football game and the Jets having been at this field for a really long time, you go to the women's bathrooms at halftime and half the cubicles don't have toilet paper. And there's no soap in any of the dispensers and had not been at any point of time. There were no sanitary bins in the cubicles. And I'm told that the men's toilets are just as bad. Now, it's not sexy to spend time on your like podcast review talking about bathroom facilities, but this really matters. You want people to come to watch a football game, you've got to have basic shit, like there being toilet paper in the toilets, because that gives you a bad game day experience. And it's like, well, why would I come back if I have to bring a roll of toilet paper every time I go to number two sports ground? And the council blames the club, and the club blames the council, and it never gets fixed. And, you know, they don't unlock the bloody accessible toilet half the time. And the security were like, we don't have the key. We can't actually open that toilet. Council has the key. So I just think that's something that, like, the league and clubs and councils or ground owners need to think about, is that that is so basic. It is so basic to have bathrooms that are clean, accessible, they're properly stocked with what needs to be stocked. I've never had it that bad at any other ground I've been to. I've been to a lot of grounds, and that just, it's a professional league, it's a professional club. It's not like it was a new first time they hosted women's football and realized that they were going to run out of loo paper in the women's toilets if they didn't stop. Oh, I could finish my rant, but, like, honestly, that was fucking shocking, and I'm still really angry about that. But, you know, the Jets fans were like, it's like this every time we complain, and it's still like this, and it's just not good enough. Not fucking,
I mean, in the end, it's got to be down to Newcastle. I mean, yes, they may not run the grounds, and they may not have the keys to the toilets, but they're the ones that are taking the money from the fans to provide them with entertainment at a venue, so it's up to them to get that venue up to scratch. So yes, I'm sure dealing with Newcastle Council is probably not very easy, but, you know, if the Jets don't realise, you know, the kind of damage they're doing to their own reputation and to a potential revenue source, then, you know, then it's their detriment. Of course, the Jets have their own problems in terms of who actually owns and runs them anyway. That probably doesn't help.
No, it wouldn't help. But, like, I mean, this is where I think at the APL level, they need to be saying, these are the basic standards. And the thing is, I don't feel like this would happen at a men's stadium. At those big stadiums, I feel like they're generally pretty good. But it's these little stadiums and nobody gives a shit because it's just the women's game. And like I said, I have heard that the men's toilets there were also bad. But it's this kind of like second-class set of facilities for not just for the you know, the fans, but also for players and stuff like that. And it just being accepted, like, it's just the women's game. Who cares? And that was so frustrating. I'm still really angry about it. Yeah. Well, at least Sky Stadium is good. It has toilet paper and lots of toilets. It's just so basic. It's so basic. Get that right. But there's other things to complain about with some of these big stadiums, like, you know, the food costs are really high. Whereas, like, you know, number two sports ground, it was like a local canteen. They had sausage sizzle, you know.
It's often better when they have a local one rather than having palmed it out to a big subcontracting company who then put in the same basic stadium hot dogs and stadium burgers. And, you know, $20
and they're all shit, years. And it's all wage theft because they don't pay their fucking Merivale, don't pay.
Absolutely. So no one has any care, no one has any ownership on it. Yeah.
Yeah. The difference
got to work on this product.
Quite big, you know. At Sky Stadium, you can get chips. I think it costs $6.50 or something, maybe $8.50 for just a small carton of chips. It's pretty much robbery. But then at Porirua Park, you can get, I think, a sausage and some bread for $1.50. And then that goes to, or maybe $2, but pretty darn cheap. I think it goes to the local rugby club or something. So it is kind of just that, you know, the size of organisations that organise the food, I guess.
You really kind of need somehow both,
yeah.
You know, because that is the thing with a big stadium. Of course, they're going to outsource it. Like, if you have 13,000 people show up, you need more than one barbecue to sell everybody a $2 sausage. So. I guess there's a bit of give and take, but that stuff, it does matter.
Yeah. Look, there's a way to do it. I don't know if you guys have ever been to any sports stadiums in the US, but the difference between the F&B offerings over there and what you have in Australia and New Zealand, it's just light years away. I mean, absolute light years away. It doesn't matter about, you know, how good or how new the stadium is or even the sight lines, but the food offerings over there is something they take seriously. It's so much better. I mean, the last MLS game I went to was in Seattle, and Seattle 7. The bars there had 110 different craft beers. I mean, can you just imagine that? That's just the level of, you know, organization they have to do that. But they make sure they do that because, you know, they've got the customers to do that, and they will make the money doing it. Whereas in stadiums over here, it just tends to be, well, we'll throw a light beer on, we'll throw some crappy white wine, and yeah, that'll do. And they'll accept it because they can't go anywhere else. Over there, it's considered, well, they do have options. You know, maybe they won't come again, or they'll pay them and go to see the baseball rather than the NFL, or go see the ice hockey instead. So
there's so little power against that the clubs have. You know, that the clubs might want to do this or that, but it's all contracted, and they have like no power at all. But like, they'd make potentially better money if the food offerings were better. I think the exception over here in Sydney is Allianz does have some really good options, but it's
getting a lot
nothing on MLS.
Yeah, it's definitely expensive. Getting a lot better than it was Allianz. But yeah, it's expensive. I mean, $6 for some chips, Alex, sounds wonderful, because I think they're 11 or 12 over here. So,
yeah. It's so bad. So, you know, if you're listening to the pod and you have any suggestions for how, you know, clubs could, well, how games, the matchday experience can be improved, especially when you're looking at that balance of the smaller grounds with a little bit more power versus the big grounds that have more facilities, I'd be curious to hear what you have to say. Any more comments on any of the games or otherwise? No.
I just loved having it. I loved having a midweek game. Great. I'm used to having midweek games. More games are better for me. So I know Mac as a player's out, but I'll happily see 2 games a week.
I think the issue is there were a lot of people complaining over here because they didn't realise that Tuesday was a public holiday in New Zealand. But it was really early over here. So, it, you know, on the Eastern Coast, it's it would kick off at 2 p.m. I had to rearrange my work meetings that I could like watch it. So it's it was inconvenient, but people who were pointed out to that it was a public holiday in New Zealand did understand why. But that's the catch with those midweek games. All right. Otherwise, well, thanks for listening. We will be on YouTube and via all the podcast platforms as well. Big thanks to Alex, and a really extra big thank you to Danny for coming on. And we'll see you next time. Bye.